Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Say goodbye to diluted creams and serums that are often made up of 70% water and 15% preservatives, leaving minimal space for the ingredients your skin craves. The scientists behind Fiber Skincare have spent 15 years perfecting nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. And just 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping these nanofibers around oil or liquid-based ingredients. The result was a formula that delivers five times more active ingredients compared to creams or serums with no need for fillers like water preservatives or emulsifiers. The first formulation made with this technology is a plant-based anti-wrinkle set of patches that you use over 7 days, applying them just like your favorite serums. Your skin will feel tighter in 10 seconds, and over 7 days, the program is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by 19.4%. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee where if your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they will give you your money back, no questions asked. Go to fiberskincare.com and use code unfiltered for 15% off.
It's far from invisible.
I wear NYX during my period now at nighttime because with a tampon, because you never know what's going to happen, because sometimes it's nothing and sometimes it's like you're riding a river. You know what I mean?
I'll literally text Kat in the morning. I'll be like, so I got shot in the vagina last night all over my bed.
And
that
like,
didn't used to happen.
I don't know why you're so stubborn. It solves all your problems. You don't have to have a bath. You don't have to put a towel. You like solves your problems, Natalie.
Drop it like it's hot.
Natalie, what do I do?
I hope it's giddy.
We know who Joanna Griffiths is. We've known her since, a lot of years and before. NYX was what it is today. She is the founder and president of NYX and KT by NYX, the direct-to-customer intimate apparel brands, reinventing intimates for real life. Since launching the company in 2013, Joanna has built NYX into one of the fastest-growing intimate apparel brands globally. She holds multiple patents and helped invent the leak-proof underwear category, which is pacing to become a $1 billion category and has changed the lives of millions of around the world. Welcome, Joanna.
Thanks. Yeah, it's so nice to be chatting with you. I think the last time we did this was in 2013. Do you remember
that? Oh my gosh. No. Like, what did we do in 2013?
I went to one of your first events.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes, we remember that.
We recorded, I don't know if it was a podcast or like a YouTube video behind the scenes. We need to find it.
Oh my gosh, I will find it. My kids go back and watch all of it. And they're like, why did you stop videoing it? And I said, because at some point you look back and there's a cringeworthy factor until you get way past it. And then you're like, oh, it's so cute. And I'm like, you don't want to be watched. Like, I don't, you don't want to be on there during your like 9 to 15 years. Like, you don't need to have that documented. You do not need to see yourself all over YouTube. So I said, you can document what you want and then you can release what you want when you want.
And I also remember even before you came to that event, and that was like the launch party of our company, and you set up like a pop-up because you were trying to get signups for the Indiegogo to raise money for this company. But before that, we went and we met like at like a coffee shop with your one of your best friends who was working with you, because I think it was like literally the two of you at that time, and telling us about this idea of this kind of underwear. And it was like a new concept. We were like, wow. And you were just, I remember thinking like, you're so young to be so brave to talk about what for a lot of women is sort of like an uncomfortable situation and awkward and smell and pee and blood and all that. But how old were you at that time?
When we would have met, probably 29,
I think. It takes women a long time to start talking about that kind of stuff. And you never had babies, so it's not like you were already like all out there. And like,
and the internet wasn't what it was. Like, it wasn't like we share everything.
No, people did not share very much at all. But you're so right. It was like spending a lot of time deep into like online forum groups and chat forums and getting people to talk to me about these things. It was way before it was mainstream.
So. How did you come up with, like, I don't have the questions because I'm recording on my phone, but like, how did that idea, when did that idea come to your head? And were you like 15 or like, you were like, I need an idea or.
And I don't think it didn't sound like you were fixing your own problem.
At the time I wasn't. No, it's a great point. So I came up with the concept. I first learned how many women and people leaked post-pregnancy and during pregnancy when I was about 26 years old.
Like urine or blood?
Yes, urine. Like the idea that if you sneezed, you would pee a little, or if you laughed too hard, you would pee a little. I learned that it was 1 in 3 women, basically.
How'd you learn that? What a random fact.
It is a random fact. So my mom's a doctor. Mm-hmm. And I had a roommate at the time who was an OBGYN, or like in residency to become an OBGYN. We're just talking more broadly about this conversation. And it was like a light bulb went off in my head. I was like, how do so many people experience this? It's really young. It's not what you think of when you think of incontinence or anything like that. And so that was kind of the initial spark. I was like, whoever solves this problem is going to be really successful, because so many people need a product and none of the brands are really speaking to like me or my friend group or, you know, people that were younger. So that's where it started. And then I went back and did an MBA in 2011, 2012. And that's when I really honed in on the idea of what if it was underwear, and went down this like wild rabbit hole of thinking about, could that work and what would it look like and how would we make it? And came up with this concept to incorporate the technology into underwear.
Wow.
And that was, I guess, 12 years ago now.
You're like A-type, right? You're A-type, like, because that, to hold on to that idea and then go to a master's and be like, I can figure this. Was it figure outable? Were you like, I can figure this out? Or were you like, everyone's like, what? Like, I'm so curious what that was.
I think I did it and I moved forward with it because all of my classmates were like, this is a really good idea. Mm. So it was kind of the era where like every entrepreneur was starting an app or trying to make a technology company and solving like what are now very real problems. But, you know, at the time when you talk about, I need a faster booking service for hair and makeup artists, or, you know, it just felt like kind of secondary problems in the world. And then I was one of the few people in my class where I was like, I have a product idea and this is what it is. And everyone from the get-go was like, wow, this feels really powerful. And you're right, this should exist. And so, I think that in the absence of all of that encouragement from my classmates, from my friends, from my family, I don't know if I would have been brave enough to try.
Were you surrounded by women in your class? Like, 'cause I feel like the school gave you an opportunity and more time to explore an idea? Is that what a master's is? Like, let's explore an idea together as a class?
No, I went to do just like a general MBA, and I candidly thought I would leave and then go back into media and entertainment because that's what I worked in before. I'd worked at Universal Music and in television and at TIFF and in film. And so I thought I would go back into entertainment and was like very, I was type A, I am type A, but I was very focused on digital content. Like I was kind of fascinated about how all of the stories that we were telling were moving from traditional forms of media to online. And so that's what I thought I would do. And then just really found that the school I went to happened to have a big focus on entrepreneurship. Mm. I don't even think I really knew what the word was, to be honest.
Yeah. Like,
what is an entrepreneur? What does that mean? And then I took some amazing classes throughout the year that were all about like product design and how do you solve problems and how do you like think through making an idea and turning it into a reality. And so every class I took where there was a group project, I would insist that we did it on Nix. And so I got like all of this help and support from my classmates.
They need that in high school. They need this in high school.
Totally.
They need that because they have all the ideas and they're living the problems. They need this. This is so crazy.
And to go through the steps and not for the first time when you're actually like creating something, but just actually, I remember my brother's school, he actually had to start a business, create a product and sell it. And I always remember because he did these like beaded bracelets and we all bought them. We thought it was so cool. So that, oh, I don't know what class that was, but I'm thinking from you, you're like, okay, so I have a product. Now you're like, okay, I need to manufacture shit. I need to design things. You're talking about creating digital content to sell it. All I'm seeing from someone who's like thinking they want to start a business is that is going to cost so much money. Where am I going to get that money? And I know that you had to get investors. Were they hard to get? And did you have to go to a lot of men and explain your freaking leaky underwear and get them to get on board and give them your money when they really have
no idea,
nothing in common with what you're talking about?
It's such a great question. And I think I mentor a lot of female founders now and people who are out there raising money. And what I fundamentally believe to be true is the easiest check in theory that you're ever going to raise is the one before you launch your product, where it's just you and your idea kind of pitching and selling yourself. And can you articulate what the problem is? And can you get people bought into the vision that you have? So that round, like the friends and family round I did before we launched, was one of the easier rounds that we did. Once we launched and I was talking to more like institutional investors, VC funds, like those kinds of groups, then things got hard. And it was predominantly hard because most of the people I would pitch would be men. There weren't a lot of like strong women voices at the decision-making table at the time in venture capital. And every conversation I had would go the same way. I would go from meeting to meeting, and this was, you know, pre-virtual or Zoom. So I'd have my like backpack and go like just like Sand Hill Road in Silicon Valley and do like 10 meetings a day. And the person on the other side would probably have 20 pitches a day, kind of back to back to back. So when they would realize what I was there to talk to them about, there would be this moment of like panic.
Did you have the product too? Like a prototype?
Yeah,
like you had to pull it out?
Put it on the table.
Oh God.
They would then clue in that I was there to talk to them about underwear, periods, and pee. And they would stop the meeting and they would run and go and find whatever women they could find in the office.
Oh, that's
and
smart.
Sometimes that would be like an analyst. Sometimes it would be an EA. Sometimes like it would just any woman they could find.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would become this really.
A visitor. Really get in here, please. You don't even work here. Get in here.
I'm like, does this woman even work here? Like,
what? Calling them off the street. In here now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig.
Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And there would be this very uncomfortable exchange where they would sort of look to this woman in the room and have them be the focus group of one. Like, do you pee yourself?
Oh, God.
Do you leak on your period? And the power dynamics at play in that room were so off base that, like, it takes a lot to, like, admit to someone that you experience these things, right? So that was the harder era, I would say, of fundraising. And it took me a really long time to kind of raise money in the early days during that phase. And I had to really create a company that spoke for itself in terms of success and metrics, where people still didn't understand it, but they couldn't argue with it. Like, they're like, I don't really get this concept, and I'm not sure if it's big or if it's niche, but your metrics are really good, so clearly you're onto something.
I'm imagining what it's like to go pitch yourself. Is it like Dragon's Den or Shark Tank? Like, is that sort of the vibe where you, or is that so glamorized that that's not really how it is? Because I imagine.
And did you also do that?
I did Dragon's Den. I pitched on Dragon's Den very early as well. Most pitches are you in a meeting room or on a Zoom call with like one to two other people on the other end. Maybe they're paying attention. Maybe they're distracted. You get like a 30-minute meeting and they're looking at 2,000 companies a year. So it's not glamorous at all. And I think, you know, there's all these tools that you can make to help you fundraise. You can have like a great pitch deck. You can have these things. But what I found is that the best conversations and the most effective ones are when you're just speaking to what you're building and then knowing your metrics to back it up. Like, no one really wants to be on a call to be talked through a PowerPoint presentation, right?
Yes. No, we don't. Well, if we can read it, you don't have to read it to me. I can read that.
That's exactly right. And it, you know, everyone comes into the conversation with a different level of like knowledge of the problem, the category. And so actually when you're like too prescriptive and taking people through a deck, it almost interrupts the flow of questions and the journey that people go on to really like triangulate and understand. Yeah.
Did you go into the room alone for these pitches?
In the early days I did. Yeah. And actually I even as we built Nix, I was typically the only person in the conversations raising money. So I did a lot of that myself. Yeah. With the help of team members to sort of get organized and have all the data. And it's like a huge team lift to raise a fundraising round. But oftentimes for those first conversations, it would just be me.
I feel like we need to go back to all those men and then give them like, you know, when they do the fake pregnancies, we'll give them like underwear that just all of a sudden leaks out of nowhere and they don't know what's going on. And you're not really told, there's no like warning sign. And then all of a sudden we just start pushing buttons and they're like, oh my, what is going on? And then they leak through their pants and they're like, I get it. You know, but it happens all day long and they're not sure what's happening. Then they put something in there and then it doesn't work. And then they go again and you're like, that would really sell it to them if they could just feel what that feeling is like when you're,
it's like you never feel totally safe.
What am I wearing? Is it in the genre? You know, they need that. They need to try that.
Yeah. And I think when you have someone who experiences that gets their period or remember what it's like, or they have a child who does, like, they're just that much more sympathetic to like what the challenge is that you're trying to solve. But it was such an interesting journey, to be honest. And I remember my husband, Dave, who also works at Nix, like before I would go on these fundraising trips, I would like really have to pump myself up that I was able to do it. Like the mental space of that much rejection is like, I think I raised one round of financing and I have a spreadsheet and 500 people told me no. And so to like face that kind of rejection over and over and over again, and to learn from it and to take the good pieces and kind of is a real thing. And I also used to wear this like one leather vest.
Your power vest.
Yeah. It's like, I didn't want to give it away, but I'm never going to wear it again. But it just made me feel like I had some kind of, like a body shield on to kind of protect myself as I was in those conversations.
You know, just obviously we've, you know, we have seven kids and we have daughters, and I think about, at that in your, you know, 20s, or maybe you were, no, you were in your, probably in your 20s at the time, and to have the confidence to walk into a room believing so much in your product and getting so many rejections, that's got to take, there's just got to be something in you. I mean, is it the way you were raised, is, or was it just something, I mean, because so many people want to do what you've done with a product, but you made it happen. What would you think, like, what was the secret sauce of all the things that made that magic?
It's a great question. I think I'm a combination of optimistic. Like I genuinely believe that things can be good. I believe in the good of others. I believe in what's possible. So a big part of me is that I'm an optimist. And then the second part is I grew up in a family with like really high expectations. Mm. And in some cases, this sort of ideal that like there was no such thing as good enough. And so I've learned over the years, like I'm pretty hard on myself, and I'm always like trying to be better and trying to internalize. So if you're constantly trying to be better yourself, when someone else points out how you could be, you're like, okay, got it. I'll add that to my list of my like personal. So it's sort of, I don't know if it's the healthiest thing in the world, but it's how I got through it, I would say.
But it also said, like what I'm hearing there too, is that you were able to take feedback and then grow from it instead of being like, that's shut not down. Right. You're not right. That's not right. I'm going to continue to do the way I want to do it. I'm doing it great. Look at how great I'm doing. That's hard too.
And I don't know if this will speak to both of you, because you've built like an incredible company and business as well. You don't have all the answers. Like you're not going to get everything right. And actually you have to pivot and evolve constantly to always be getting better. And so I think when I meet founders and they're very like stuck in their ways about what they think it should be, I view it as a complete setback for them, because you have to like be open-minded, and you have to be able to filter and to take the good from the bad. The other thing I did that I think is really important was really just understanding the whole dynamics of fundraising. So if you talk to people who work at like the top early stage VC funds, and you recognize that each partner there looks at 2,000 deals a year and they make one investment, you start to realize that it's just a numbers game. Like you actually have to get 500 no's to get a yes, or you have to get 50 no's to get a yes. You know, like it's just because the bar is so high, and you have to find like the right people, the right fit, the right belief in the company.
The right day. Because they could have seen a woman just like you the day before and like, oh, she kind of like her. And like, no, we have a woman already who's 29. Mm-hmm. We need to focus on another age or another, you know, gender or whatever.
Yeah. And then at some points too, to be honest, I kind of cut my losses. Like I didn't go back to Silicon Valley or SF for probably 4 years because it just wasn't worth my time. Mm-hmm. And some of the feedback I was getting as a female founder, it was weird feedback. Like it was like, oh, your company's doing well, but you're not investing enough in your personal brand. You should be getting up in the morning and posting on Instagram what you're wearing, and you're not doing
what
that.
What the hell? Wait, from a man in like San Francisco? Yeah. Pardon?
Yeah, meaning exactly. Like you can't necessarily be like super successful unless you grow your own brand and followers and then sell them that thing. But you didn't, that's not how you saw it.
It just wasn't who I was at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think that in that era, there were a lot of really powerful examples of female founders who had done that. Mm-hmm. So you know, who had built their own profile, like Emily Weiss from Glossier or Sophia Amorosa of Girl Boss. And it was, this person had kind of invested in a lot of those mm-hmm. people. And so he couldn't for the life of me understand like why I wasn't making that a priority.
Yeah.
And that's been a very weird, weird chapter for me, because even still to this day, like when I do photo shoots, I don't like doing them. I would far rather get up in a room and speak in front of 2,000 people than do a photo shoot. And I think it's because I feel this weird pressure that I have to like be this person that isn't necessarily who I am. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but it was sort of like it was kind of unfair at the time that was, you know, for some people, the reality of the only way that you can grow a business. Because if it was
a man
and another product, and he's like, I'm going to start this.
You should get in your underwear and really model your six pack to grow like, your audience and like, talk about what is in your coffee.
And he's like, no, I know a fucking good technology for something, and I don't need to grow my, like, why do those two things have to go together?
That's exactly it. That was the conversation I had with this person. I was like, okay, so you're telling me that I'm lazy and not motivated because I didn't post on Instagram the outfit that I wore today. Mm. But would you ever say this to a man? Would you ever be like, unless you are posting your fashion on social media or your like workout tips, like you're not going to be successful in your company. So it did feel like a huge double standard at the time.
As a whole, and like as a woman looking back on the journey, do you feel like it was exhausting, exhilarating, or like defeating or infuriating? Like what was it like?
All of those things.
All of them. Mm-hmm. Like, were you ever, because also the world has changed so much since you started. So I'm like,
you went through a freaking pandemic.
Like, yeah. And I just wonder what are you left with inside feeling? Like in terms of looking back at the journey of, because something woke you up every day and put one foot in front of the other. And it does not sound like it was an easy journey. Like,
yeah, so I'm really glad that you asked this, because I think I've been reflecting more on this recently than I have before. And I think one of those challenges of being someone who's incredibly hard on myself, who always feels like there's like more to do and I could do better and there's more to come, is that I haven't always allowed myself to like take those moments and be proud of what I've accomplished. And when I look back and I see what we did, and then also, I mean, I did find ways to use my voice and platform on social media. It wasn't posting outfits. It was sharing some of these stories of how hard it was and how it's a mental journey. I am proud of myself, because not very many people were willing to do that. Not very many people were willing to kind of expose the less glamorous side of what this all looks like.
Yes.
But I know how much time and energy certain parts of being a founder takes, fundraising being one of them. And when I talk to people and they're going out to raise a round, I'm like, what's your energy level like right now? Where's your self-confidence at? Mm. How much gas do you have left in your tank? Because if you're going in and it's not full, then it could kind of burn you out in the process, and it's not worth it.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So I'm getting all my things right, but the company was purchased by a large company, which was very exciting.
Right.
It's a dream. And and the company, and it did really well. It was like, I mean, what was, so you were the, it was the biggest sale of a female founder. Tell me that, that stat, that really good one.
Yeah, no problem.
I should know.
So yeah, I sold 80% of the company about a year and a half ago, to a really large, publicly traded multinational. And it was the largest private exit by a solo female founder in Canadian history.
And did they come to you, or was there was like a whole thing going on? Or one day they were like, hey, can we talk about, like, did you know that was coming?
Did they hit you up in your DMs? Hey, can we talk?
I think I got a LinkedIn message.
No. So no. I love it.
Oh, my.
And then it started, and it was a long process, and nobody knew about
message.
It.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So I think one of the things that I've done a good job at over the years is maintaining relationships with people, and always being open-minded when a competitor or like someone in the similar space would reach out to me, and just having conversations with them and keeping the door open. So I'd actually known the people that bought us. I'd spent a lot of time talking to them 5 years ago.
Mm.
And we didn't move forward at the time, but we left things on like very good terms. Uh-huh. And it's an interesting story. They went on to launch leak-proof underwear of their own. So they predominantly make pads and tampons and diapers and toilet paper. And they went on to launch, we didn't partner together. They went on to launch leak-proof underwear on their own. And when I saw the announcement go up that they'd done this, I wrote on the person's LinkedIn post. I was like, congratulations. Really great to see this come to fruition. I know you've been working on it for a long time. And the week later, they reached out to me.
Can I just ask, when you saw that LinkedIn, what did you feel in your body? I was trying to imagine you right there reading it. Yeah.
At first met.
Yeah. You're like, are you fucking serious?
But then I was like, you know what? Actually, this person was really nice and I got to know them, and this has been their project that they've been working on for a long time, and they made it happen. So like, congratulations, you know? But at the time I was really not looking to sell the company. I'd just gone out and raised our Series B. So we raised like a $50 million round of financing. That's the one that I did while I was pregnant with twins. So I had this like really intense timeline and faced a lot of backlash and criticism about being pregnant and being a parent and raising the company and could I do it all? And so the way that the timing went is on the Friday afternoon, I closed our $50 million Series B. The Monday morning at 8 a.m., I got induced to deliver my twins.
Joanna, Maniac. I'm like, I feel like I'm short of breath for you right now. What?
Are know,
you?
And you're still did, and you, so young. And this was
your,
crazy.
These were your first, right? Like, they were your first.
It was my second and third, so I had a 20-month-old at home, though.
Oh,
so
my gosh. So you had a relaxing weekend, a relaxing weekend before. No.
Great time to get pregnant.
This happens when I meet you two, and you're like, we have seven kids.
You're like, no problem.
So the Monday I gave birth to my twins, and the Tuesday I was still in the hospital, and I got a message from the folks at Essity saying that they wanted to talk. And it was not on my radar to sell the company at the time at all, but I had really liked the people I'd met there before. I think it's a really good organization. And so we just started talking and exploring if this could work and what it would look like. And it was a really interesting dynamic because I wanted a great partner, and I feel like I found that, but I didn't actually want to sell the company.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, we worked through the details, and I still own 20% of the company. I still run it day to day. But we have this great partner, and obviously had a really successful financial exit for the investors that did say yes to me.
I know that's so nice to go back and be like, you made the right choice.
Yeah. And also, you know, got not a million, but like countless emails from other people who had passed, and they were like,
oh,
just like, I'm really sorry I didn't see it. And like, you did it. And
oh yeah, you're sorry.
Yeah, and hopefully challenging them to think differently the next time that they look at a woman-led company in a kind of women's health adjacent space, and to see that it could be something big, that it's not niche. You know, that you can be a parent and build a company, like all of these biases that I kind of experienced over the years. I think, you know, as women, we do need success stories to kind of prove that it can be done, mm-hmm. right? Like,
well, and our daughters need to see mm-hmm. the success stories even more in magazines and in companies and in conversations, so that they know it's also possible, because although we're living it, they get to actually look up to it. So it's like two different, you know, ways that we get to do it.
And I'm thinking about, my son is reading a book now on Alexander the Great. And I'm like, he should be reading a book about Joanna Nix Griffiths. Like 336 BC. What are we even talking about?
Yeah.
Why are we learning about this? Is not relevant to the future. Anyways, that's a side note. So you're still running the company and you'll be there indefinitely. And now I feel like there's...
I want to know what kicked your ass more, parenthood or fundraising hood?
Oh, God, parenthood. Come on. three kids under two. There were days when I was like, I just need to get back to work because mm-hmm. this is so hard mm-hmm. at home. Like,
I hope every mom hears that, or every woman at home who feels undervalued, that, you know, you just said how hard it was to raise money, and parenthood still took the cake on that one.
Oh, yeah. My kids, take it out of me every single day, and being a parent I think is one of the hardest, if not the hardest thing to do.
And it's the never-ending business of raising these people to be successful.
It is. And on that note, I haven't told this story too broadly, but when we sold the business, one of the things that my husband and I decided we were going to do was buy our nanny a house, because I could have had any CFO in the world, any other executive, but Rebecca, our nanny, who's been with us since the day our son was born, is the main reason why we were able to do what we did. And our family does not work without her.
Oh, I feel the same way about people that support us.
Wait, how old is your son now?
My son is four, almost five. He'll be five in April.
So, but wow, because you didn't actually know her that long.
I know, but you know what it's like when you yep. spend every day, almost every day with yep. someone, and you see the love and care that they have for your kids. And it in the case of our situation, she loves our kids almost as much, if not the same as yep. we do.
Wow.
And I just, there was something that felt completely unfair to me that she was as big of a part of our success as someone who worked at Nix mm-hmm. in a role. And what was her retirement plan? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? What was this going to be? So I would love to really normalize taking care of the people that help take care of you, you mm-hmm. know?
It's funny you say that. One of my other best friends who I grew up with from when I was really young, her parents raised me and my parents raised her, and her dad had passed away, but she just recently, we were at his memorial yesterday, and she lived in New York, but he lived here, and the his caregivers were at the funeral, and she said, you have instilled my faith in humanity because of how you have taken care of my dad, and he genuinely loved you, and I know that you love them, and the fact that you're here, and you cared so much. And she's like, I could not have, you gave me everything. And you gave him everything for the end of his life. So it kind of, there are people who take care of us in ways that don't just, it exceeds taking care of our children. And it goes on to, these people in our lives who show up and continuously show up. And she's like, there's no way this could have happened. And you could have done what he wanted without you. And it was just, it just reminds me of what you're saying, is that mm-hmm. we need people in our lives to help us at all stages. And they are so important. And she's like, you are everything. I can't thank you enough. Mm-hmm. So it's so nice you gave her that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever watched the show Celebrity IOU? I think it's called.
Is it the show where they give them a show? Give them a house?
Someone in their family or someone? I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. With the Property Brothers.
Yeah.
Honestly, the people that they've had on the show, the celebrities that they've had on that show, are every major celeb has done it. Brad Pitt's done it. The Kardashians have done it. Literally everyone wants to do this because everybody has a person in their life that went above and beyond. And very similar story to what you're sharing. Michael Bublé had a caretaker for, I think it was his grandfather. And if you want to cry your eyes out, watch that episode, because it's just such a cool show to watch and to see. And
that is so lovely. I used to, back in the day, before it was a long time ago, there was it was a home renovation show where they gave a deserving family a home. And I used to watch every Sunday, but I had to quit because I knew like I would be crying so much. And of course it felt good and it was happy. But some days I was like, I just can't cry anymore. So I know if I watch that show, it's just going to be like, I need to be prepared, like makeup off. Cause it's emotional to watch like these heartfelt stories and deserving people. It's just sometimes a bit much, you know?
I think it was Extreme Home Makeover.
Yes. Yes.
And bring, like, we did a show similarly on CBC with Debbie Travis when I worked there. It was called All for One. And you bring like this entire community together to do something to help build a house for someone who really deserved it. And I'm the same as you. I would be like 1,000 tissues, just like sobbing my eyes out.
Yeah. Like, no, you got to be prepared for that kind of emotion.
And I do love that you're talking about help and that we all need help and it's okay to need help because sometimes it's like a secret. Like it's like, and we get judged for having help. But I'm so glad you're like, she was as important as my CEO because I couldn't be here if I didn't have her. So mm-hmm. I think that is really important.
Let's just, before we, let you go. Let's talk about, I feel like everywhere we turn, people are talking about perimenopause. We were like talking
about
that.
You know what I thought about that?
What?
I'm like, that's just our algorithm because they know what we search. I feel like it's because what we talk about and they're like, you're the age demo, let's go. And I'm like, oh, it is not. It is just coming to us.
That was like, when I first found out when the doctor was like, yeah, you guys are perimenopause. Well, is that like revealing a specific age of mine? And it's like, we're always perimenopausal, right? Everything.
No.
What?
No. It's like like 30, you can be like 38 to 50, not like forever.
But some people can have perimenopause really early. Like I have a friend who went through at 30.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It can start early, but it's like the period that leads up to menopause, which is your last period. 12 months after your last period is menopause. It's a single day. And perimenopause is like all the changes that are happening as you gear up.
Menopause happens in one day.
Yeah, because you don't get it again.
Perimenopause is the single day that is 12 months after the last period you will ever get.
Okay.
And every leading up to that, as you go through the transitions and you experience it, that is perimenopause.
And during perimenopause, when you say you have this invisible period that you talk about, what is that?
Yeah. So the reason why we call it this invisible period is that for some people, perimenopause can be a decade. It can be 6 years. It can last up to 10 years. And so just this idea that there's this whole period in a woman's life, which can be a decade, like we're not talking about a short period of time that no one really talks about, that no one really understands, where there's so little conversation. So that's why we called it the invisible period.
Why is it different than your regular period? That's probably a stupid question.
Oh, sorry. No, it's more like a metaphor, like this invisible chapter in your life that isn't really publicly spoken about. And I think that it's been quite taboo for a while, in part because until quite recently, women didn't really want to talk about aging, right?
Yep.
Like we were viewed as having expiry dates. And once you got to a certain age, you know, you'd see it in Hollywood, you would stop getting cast in films, you would like sort of disappear in marketing. I think it's all changing now, which is why it's exciting. Like, I think we're seeing the conversation, but there was a lot, and this is just me talking anecdotally, but I think there was a lot going on in our heads around the role that like being fertile plays as being a woman, and like this whole notion of an expiry date and not wanting to age because our self-worth is so tied to our appearance, that there's like this whole chapter as we're up towards menopause that a lot of people just, it wasn't being spoken about. Mm. And there's a lot of shame. And there's so many symptoms associated with perimenopause, and a lot of them really do affect your mental health. And so I think it's so important that we talk about these things.
Imagine J-Lo came out and was like, I'm menopause. Like I'm menopausal. It'd be so good. You know,
right. Like she
was
just like, deaf is.
She deaf is definitely probably
doesn't
through menopause
anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only person I ever remember, like in my history, when I'm thinking back to this, is Samantha on Sex and the City, when she couldn't take her hormones when she went on the trip for her menopause. And that's the only time I ever heard anyone talk about it.
That was probably the first time that it was spoken about in popular culture or television, mm-hmm. was Samantha on Sex and the City. necessity, right?
So you find for Nick's, there's definitely like a synergy in this topic conversation.
Well, yes, Natalie, because we know what happens to you. So yes,
this invisible period is from invisible.
I wear Nick's during my period now at nighttime because with a tampon, because you never know what's going to happen, because sometimes it's nothing and sometimes it's like you're riding a river. You know what I mean?
I'll literally text Kat in the morning. I'll be like, so I got shot in the vagina last night all over my bed. And that didn't used to happen.
I don't know why you're so stubborn. It solves all your problems. You don't have to have a bath. You don't have to put a towel. It solves your problems, Natalie. Just means you have to find your laundry. That's all you have to do is find where it is.
I just am not into wearing underwear to bed.
So I think at Nick's, we just love to break down barriers and taboos and talk about these things that people aren't really talking about. So that's one kind of logical place. From a product standpoint, your periods become irregular, like they're less predictable, especially as they're, you know, that's why menopause is one day, because you could get your period and then you could get your period 9 months later,
yeah,
but you still got it again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's the whole irregularity component. And then I think it's 74% of people say that they experience heavier periods during perimenopause. And so again, it's like this notion that like you need a different solution than maybe what worked for you before.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing bigger than Ultra. There's no tampon bigger than Ultra unless you're going to, you know what I mean? So you kind of need to do something different there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, like some of the products that we've launched more recently absorb the equivalent of 7 to 9 super tampons worth. Like that is just like a lot.
Okay, fine. I'm gonna stop ruining my sheets.
Yes.
Oh my god,
it sucks to ruin your sheets.
I know it really does. And you know, I'm actually on a medication now to lessen the amount of blood because I wanted to go on the pill because I just wanted to not get my period. But then there's blood clotting, which was going to potentially be a problem. So now I'm on some pill to make it so it's not as heavy. And then I have to remember to take that thing and it's freaking this big. Anyway,
this is why it's so important to talk about these things so that people can advocate for themselves and they can like speak to their healthcare practitioner about what's going on and like really find the right solution.
I wear the boy shorts to bed, just so you know. The boy shorts are very comfortable. Okay. They're like shorts. So it doesn't feel like you're wearing just underwear.
I'll hook you up. We can get you. There's like,
I actually wear the teen ones because you know the teen because they have the boy shorts.
I do know.
I mean, you made them. You know, those are the ones I wear. I like the boy shorts.
There you go, talking about something that nobody's talking about. First, even before you were, I don't know, but you're incontinence. You don't need to tell us about that. Before you even experienced anything for babies, and now I don't think that you're at this place and you're talking about it before it's starting for you.
I want to say one story how I knew about it. I remember I was young and I was on the trampoline and I wanted the mom to come with. I wanted my mom to come on with me. And she's like, I can't. I'm like, why? And she's like, well, funny thing happens. I'm like, what? And I'm like, you can't jump on a trampoline? And she's like, no. And I was like, you're weird. Like, I never heard it. I'm like, you're lying. You know, kind of like, you're just making an excuse. You don't want to do it. And then it's true.
Meanwhile, she's just being honest.
Yeah, I know. Well, we appreciate you so much. And where can people, I mean, we'll link the products. And if you don't know them, go look it out. You also have an amazing bathing suit line, which really is a huge problem for teens. And I'm so glad that barrier is being broken down because how many girls sit by the pool, don't go in and don't get changed because of their period and they don't feel comfortable going to camp because of their period and they miss out on half of life because of their period. So I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing, not only providing solutions, but also for our younger generation, making them feel like it's okay to have their period.
I mean, honestly, I feel like we're always doing a lot of exciting things at Nick's, but one of the things I'm the most passionate right now is our teen line. And like when I'm at the park and moms come up to me, like we all just want to find things that help our kids, you know, and periods were such a disaster for me growing up, like candidly.
Good word.
And so all the talking about like, if we can help people have it not feel like such a big deal and also like empower parents to like have a tool that they can give to their kids so they don't need to worry about it. Like I'm lucky at Nick's. I feel like people tell me stories all the time that are really moving, but some of my favorite ones recently are about parents buying for the teen line because it's just like,
I mean, when you see your kid, I don't think you know it until you see your kid suffer from it. And then you're so pissed that they have to think about it and that they're concerned about it. And that's what's so shitty because half of them all are getting it. So it's like, you know, hopefully they can normalize the conversation too, so they know they're not alone. But I do feel like we need to get the boys involved too in the conversation to make it really normal. And it's not something that girls should have to think about or keep in secret for the comfort of the men and the boys in their lives. You know, it does not have to be a secret.
Our sons get to be privy to everything. We have a picture of our babies when they were little playing with tampons as a toy. You know, we're really open over here. But thank you so much, Joanna.
Yeah, love chatting with you all. I'm going to go watch that YouTube video now from 2000.
I can't wait to find it. Congratulations on all your success. Yeah. It's so amazing to see and again have our daughters up to something to be so aspirational and inspirational about.
Well, thank you for having me on your podcast and always cheering for YouTube too. You're kicking butt.
Thank you, Joanna.
I can't wait to get period underwear for our perimenopausal periods.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
You got it.
Bye.